I think what cinema can do really amazingly is make you walk a mile in the shoes of someone who you might not know, can also help you experience a place in a society that you don't know. That layer and atmosphere of fear was really consistent with what these experiences were actually like.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Tuckered Out with me, Ami Tucker. Guys, I'm getting ready for a road trip across Ireland with my two best friends. And I cannot tell you, I have been dreaming about this road trip since I was like 5 or like maybe like 10. But still, it's something I have been wanting to do for a very long time. And somehow we managed to get our shit together. So I leave tomorrow, leaving for a week. I can't believe I'm leaving for a week. I have not left my babies for more than 2 days. But you know what? Life is getting shorter. Time is flying. Got to spend time with the girlfriends. I am so excited. But before that, I got a chance today to talk to an awesome director whose film, In Flames, I watched last night and just absolutely loved. You have to watch this film. Zarar Khan is an award-winning Pakistani-Canadian filmmaker whose film, In Flames, premiered at the 76th Cannes Film Festival as part of the director's fortnight. His works have been screened and awarded in over 100 festivals, including TIFF, Locarno, and BFI London. In Flames, his feature directorial debut, has garnered critical acclaim and prizes worldwide. Born in Karachi and currently based out of Toronto, he is committed to telling stories that amplify historically marginalized communities. And guys, I'm telling you again, yes, this movie is about voices that need to be uplifted, about Pakistani women, about resilience, but it is also kind of a thriller. It was such an interesting way he told the story, and it's a perfect mix of entertaining and educating an audience, and just brilliant, blown away. I can't say enough. So please, watch the film In Flames. It comes out April 12th across North America. And I hope you enjoy my interview with Zarar Khan. I finished the film last night. I'm not saying this because you're in front of my face, but wow. Like, I was blown away. I'm not sure if you know how much you know about the podcast. I'm obviously trying to uplift South Asian voices, Asian voices in a unique way. And the way you did that with this film is so interesting because a lot of us, you know, we've watched documentaries. We are seeing more and more of our voices on screen. I don't think I've ever seen it done the way you've done it with this film. It was so interesting and unique. So I just wanted to say, first of all, kudos to you for a fantastic film. And I know this is your first directorial debut. So talk to me a little bit about the journey up till now, how this started, how long it took. I'm sure it was quite a process.
Thank you also. And thank you for having me on your show. So I guess it kind of started in 2018 when I made a short film called Dia that was exploring grief and trauma about a family, matriarchal family in Karachi, and kind of centered on the mother-daughter's disconnect. After making that short film, I wanted to return to that world because I felt like there was so much I hadn't been able to explore. There were so many layers of complexity that in a short film, I didn't have the kind of landscape to dive into. And then I also developed really great relationships with the actresses in that short, one of which, Bakhtawar Mazur, went on to play the role of Fariha, the mother, in the feature film. So then I spent the subsequent 5 years writing the feature version of the script, also kind of honing my craft as a filmmaker. Like, I come from a background of theater, and all of my film school has just been making films. So in between that first short in 2018, I made like another 5 short films. And it was kind of like me honing in on the kind of cinema that I'm attracted to, and also the kind of storytelling I feel is needed right now. And I found a deep interest in genre filmmaking and also what genre can do for storytelling and how visceral the impact of those stories can be. And also the legacy genre has of having female protagonists that are able, despite all odds, to survive and to defeat those who try to oppress them. So it was taking those kind of things together and the collaborators that I met along the way, all of that in the backdrop of what's happening across the world with women's rights, from what happened in Iran to Roe versus Wade being overturned in the States, feeling like it was really urgent for this film to be told right now, to add to that conversation, but to add to that conversation in a way where I see it as like almost ammunition. It's saying that it's a hard world, but in community, there is resistance, there is power, and wanting to tell that story.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm going to get to your cast as well. As I think I'm a typical American this way, we're obsessed with thrillers and true crime and all this stuff. What inspired you to, I guess, do you want it to call it a thriller aspect to the film? What inspired you to make it that way while telling this very deep, impactful story?
A lot of that just came from like the film ties together a lot of stories and narratives from the incredible women I know in Pakistan who live there, who work there, who are creating lives there. And there's a deep fear in many of the experiences they've had. And that fear lends itself really well to the lens and the perspective of a thriller. Many of the circumstances that are not supernatural in this film are inspired by real life. I wanted to capture that fear so that the audience felt it as well. I think what cinema can do really amazingly is make you walk a mile in the shoes of someone who you might not know, can also help you experience a place in a society that you don't know. That layer and atmosphere of fear was really consistent with what these experiences were actually like. And I see the film as kind of a genre bender where it is a thriller, but it's also family drama. It's also supernatural. And all of those come from the circumstances of this mother and daughter and how they're navigating life in this society, a society that is deeply religious. And so it's also deeply superstitious because those two always work in tandem. And so the supernatural elements also just came out of how they frame their lives and the things that happen to them. So if there's real horror, there might be a supernatural element. And that is just how they are interpreting their lives because of the society that they grew up in. I think we're really molded by the places that we come from.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. And the soundtrack that you guys used, it was very, very powerful. And it worked very well. Usually nowadays, I'm a mother of two. I usually like can't sit through a movie fully for an hour and a half without having to get up and do something. And I felt like not just because the plot, everything was so interesting and intriguing. I honestly felt like, and I want to go back and watch it because I felt like each scene, I feel like when I go back to watch it, there'll be something that I missed. I felt like there was a lot of things in each scene that maybe you were trying to tell or the audience may not see the first time. And maybe I'm wrong, but it felt that way when I was seeing it for the first time. I just knew right away. I'm like, I got to go back.
I mean, thank you. If you have two kids and you were able to watch, like, my brother just had a kid, my sister just had a kid, they have not seen a movie for a while. So
thank you
for your commitment to the art. But yeah, I mean, we were Pakistan's Oscar submission for this year. So I was traveling with the film and we had some screenings in New York for your consideration. And there was an audience member over there who was like, I described this film as a lasagna. And I was like, what? And they're like, it's deep and it's layers and you never know. There's something different in every layer. And I'm like, I take it and I love lasagna. So like, I really resonated with that metaphor.
I'm going to steal that. I was going to say onion, but everyone uses onion. So let's go with lasagna.
Onion is a part of the lasagna, depending on how you're making your sauce. So
this is true. Yeah. You got to have the onion. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So I know you also mentioned in your previous interviews that, like a lot of filmmakers, this story comes from your experiences, some of your friends' experiences. I'm so curious, what was their reaction to this, your family's reaction, and also the reaction in Pakistan?
It's been across the board. In Pakistan, it's a film that definitely stirs the pot. It's a controversial film. We knew that going into it. What we benefited from was the fact that it came from a genre lens. So it's kind of like, if you know, you know. We were able to navigate the censor board through that because they really just saw it as a ghost film. You know, and I think that's what I love about genre filmmaking. It can deliver a message with entertainment. It has a history of navigating tricky censor boards since day one. We found it really resonated with young folks. I think, you know, with social media, it's changing what the experience is like to be young. You're watching the same TikTok that someone in LA might be, you know, and you're following the same influencers. So I think they were really ready for a film like this and excited by not only the craftsmanship of what it was doing, but also of how it was showing Karachi in a way of what it's like to live there. It's a city that hasn't really seen representation in this way before. And then, you know, of course, there was the old guard who had their own opinions, but I wear that as a badge of honor. I knew this wouldn't be their film, and I'm proud that it's not. And then it's been a journey traveling with the film. You know, we've played really across the world. And I think one of the screenings that I'll always remember is we screened at Palm Springs. I remember leaving the cinema after the Q&A, and there was a young woman who was sitting, and she was in tears, and she was waiting to talk to me. She pulled me aside, and, you know, she's like, this echoes so much of my own experiences, my relationship with my mom, and I'm so happy that this film exists. I don't understand how it exists, but I'm so happy that it exists. I want, you know, I want people to watch it. And that really brought home why I made this movie and why we as a team made this movie, because there's so many people who go into making a movie. It's been really interesting bringing this film to audiences.
I think the fact that you were able to entertain with the undercurrent of educating is like the magical formula. And I just thought of this while you were speaking. I wonder if a female director had made this film, do you think it would have been received differently? I guess received at all in Pakistan. Did it help that you were male director, or did it matter?
I have found an interesting thing on Q&As where I'm there, people are much nicer versus where my producer who's there is a female, you know, our DP is a female. We have a lot of women behind the camera in this movie. Their response is more volatile because they feel like they can say things to a woman that they wouldn't say to a guy. So 100% think that that is part of it. I also think there's a legacy of people from the outside commenting on the experience of the other and having a little bit of an outsider perspective that allows you to explore that trauma without giving such a huge part of yourself. Female directors who I admire who've done this, there's a film called Beau Travail, which is about masculinity and toxic masculinity about soldiers. And it's the director's a female. And she brought such a nuanced touch to masculinity in a way that we haven't seen before. Simultaneously, the director of American Psycho is a female, which is about masculine hypercapitalism. So I admire filmmakers who are able to use their outsider perspective to contextualize the horrors and the psychology of that other perspective. And for me as a director, I think the onus is to amplify the stories that already exist in the world and to place them in a way of cinema. Those communities that I'm working with, I've worked across a diverse range of communities. They already are telling their own stories. The women of Pakistan are telling their own story and writing their own story. I'm just here to amplify. And I'm grateful to have that opportunity.
Well, you certainly did that. I'm actually talking to podcasters based in Pakistan as well now who are telling their stories loud and proud. It's very, very cool to hear and see and support. So obviously, Karachi is another big cast member of the story. I wanted to ask you, one, about your cast, who are also fantastic. How did that all, you know, I know you knew the mom before, but how did you get this crew together? And were you filming in Karachi? If you were, how was that?
It was an experience. Like, I've been shooting in Karachi. I was born there. It's a city I was born in. It's a city where my family's from. You know, we immigrated to Canada when I was 9, and we moved back when I was 16. And then I came back to Canada to do my theater undergrad. And then I really set up my career and my life in Karachi when I was 24 and built my whole career as a filmographer there, as a storyteller. So I've been working there for a long time and building up this crew kind of piece by piece. Most of the people in this film have been in films with me before. And the crew are also people who I've been working with over time. So as a result of that, you know, we're a micro-budget film, but I like to believe we don't look like that because we were able to pull favors from everywhere and give this great experience of what it feels like to really live in Karachi. And Karachi has a very unique beauty that I really wanted to capture. I think it's a really beautiful city, as do a lot of people who are from there. But to the outsider, you really have to like squint and like look through the barbed wire and like look through the haze to capture that beauty. And I wanted to capture that hazy, dusty, sense of a place and the escape you feel when you're, you know, at the beach, because it's a port city at the end of the day. And I wanted you to feel what it feels like going from this big bustling city into the Arabian Sea and what it feels like to return to that. So, you know, it was bringing this responsibility of wanting to capture a city that hasn't been captured like this before, and then having to really cast a wide net to see references for how to do that. And when I was casting that wide net, a film I saw was Tuki Buki, which is set in Dakar, Senegal, which is also a Muslim city, which is also a port city. And I was watching this movie and I'm like, this is exactly what Karachi looks like. Why haven't we shown Karachi like this before? You know, you never know where your inspirations will come from. Finding a crew that's willing, you know, because I've been working there for so long, they're like, we don't know what this guy's doing, but we're going to let him do it, because I try and foster a set where people are paid on time, which is in our industry a problem and it shouldn't be. They get good food and, you know, they feel like they're creating something of value. All of those forces came together for our casting director, Muhammad Ali Hashmi, because we lost the actress who was going to be playing the role of Mariam a few weeks before we were shooting. But, you know, he'd been casting me for me for a while, and he put out a notice amongst his theater community. And Ramisha was a blind audition via Zoom. So like this, you know, she did a reading. And I remember just watching her on my shitty Zoom camera, being entranced by her presence and not understanding where this is coming from or how she's so good. After that 45 minute being like, this is it. This is the one. And now we're going to build out the rest of the cast that we haven't yet found through her. So once we locked her, we did a reading with Omer Javed, who plays her love interest. He came from Calgary. The chemistry they had via Zoom was palpable. These are two people from very different lived experiences that were coming together to make this movie. And with Ramisha, this is her first time on camera.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I know. This is her first time on camera. She's so good.
Yeah.
So much of this character, there's intersections with her own experience as a young woman in Karachi, as an oldest daughter, as what that means in South Asian society. Because an oldest daughter is a very different burden to bear. And the camera loves her, and I'm so excited to see where her career goes from here. And then simultaneously with Bakhtawar, this is also her feature film debut. We have these two tremendous talents who are both debuting kind of what they can do with this film. And it's been such a pleasure for me as a director who's also debuting to go on this journey together.
I can't believe that's her first time. And she's from Karachi, you said. So I have to ask, because, you know, I don't want to give anything away in the film, but there are a lot of, for lack of a better word, racy scenes. Not even racy. Just pretty intense scenes for most.
There's pretty racy scenes. I would describe them as racy too.
Okay. So how were you able to get her comfortable with those scenes? Like, that's a big deal.
We had a lot of close sets. We had sets where I wasn't even in the room. And that's why it was really important to have, when we talk about diversity, we're at a place now where there's a lot of diversity in front of the camera. There's still, across the world, a lack of it behind the camera. So we went into this intentionally making sure, you know, our production team was as equitable as we could. So we had a line producer, Carol Narona, our producer, Anima Boss, our DP, Igor Nabulatova, who all identifies female. And the cinematographer, that role is so key because they're really the eyes of the film. And knowing that the person that she was in the room with, who's really quite intimate with her, is the cinematographer, is someone who shares that experience of womanhood, I think allowed Ramisha to feel more comfortable to go there, to go that extra, to do things that are considered racy in South Asian society. And for those scenes, I wasn't there. I was like outside in another room looking at a monitor, and that monitor no one could see except for me as well. So, you know, we tried the best that we could to create a space where it felt like we could be comfortable to go that extra mile to depict what it's really like.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I was squirming in my seat, and I was, you know, I've grown up here and I've seen all this stuff, but the way you guys filmed it, obviously it wasn't outwardly in your face, but yeah, I can imagine for her as a first-time actress, that must have been quite an experience.
Oh, and what helps is all the guys were like funny dudes.
Okay.
So when things were awful were happening, it was me trying to get them to all stop laughing. And I'm like, yo, we gotta get in this scene. Like, I know it's hilarious, but like, it was a good time. I say that given the context of the film, which is alarming, but it was.
No, that's good. You have to laugh. Like, it has to be that kind of light environment, I guess, to get through it, you know?
there's a legacy of directors who believe that, you know, you have to really shock and traumatize your actors to get a performance. And that's a school that I really don't abide by. You know, they're actors, they can act.
I love that. That should be like your line on Instagram. They're actors, they can act. Well, first, I know, and you've said this again in interviews, that this is ultimately about resilience. As a mother of two daughters, like, I definitely just cried because it's really is also a mother-daughter story. And that mother, I wanted to high five like 1,000 times by the end, but loved the strength that you showed between them and, you know, within themselves. But obviously it's a story about the patriarchal society of Pakistan. I guess one, and then it's probably hard to answer, do you see any, I mean, I'm from India, I go back to India quite a bit, you know, so, and I lived there for a couple of years as an expat. Do you see any of this at all shifting from when you were a young kid? And then also, because there's so many stereotypes about Pakistan as there is, more so in the West, but do you ever worry about how this movie will reflect Pakistan?
I hope it shows the incredible resistance and resilience of the women and the multifaceted of that experience. I'm aware of the burden you have when you're representing a place and the stereotypes you can feed into, but that's why I wanted to put in all the nuance that I knew how. We have a young woman who is driving, who is listening to pop music, who is pursuing her career, who's pursuing a romance. You know, she can be from anywhere. She has the same ambitions as a woman from the States, as a woman from India, you know, as a woman from, she's a person. And as someone who grew up between two very different societies, I really fundamentally think people are all the same. And we're all kind of ambitious, excited, but we're all also working within the constraints of a society. And that's what I want to show, how that society is impacting these individuals. Because South Asia does have a very unique perspective on women's autonomy, be that their property, be it their bodies, and the relationship between that autonomy and the state. And then simultaneously, both India and Pakistan have had heads of state who are women, which America has never had. So there's complexity there. And I hope that when audiences watch the film, they put themselves in the view of that character and, you know, maybe learn something about a place that they don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, I wanted to high five through the screen. So it was a pretty powerful feeling, you know. Behind the scenes, you mentioned, you know, the guys were kind of funny. Any maybe fun stories you can share that you haven't shared before?
Yeah,
like a really
totally
great day you've had? Anything funny that happened?
I mean, this wasn't funny. It was just like really affirming. We were shooting the hospital scene and it was being shot in a real hospital that was actively a hospital. It was a pregnancy ward. We nailed our take, which was that one where she's walking down the long corridor after 14 takes, really hard, really tough to do. And then a guy coming out of the room and we're all celebrating and high-fiving each other for finally getting this take. And he's celebrating too. And we're like, who are you? You know, because we're like, we know each other. And he's like, I am so happy. My wife just had a baby. We're like, congratulations. And then he's like, it's a girl. And he was so happy. He started coming out and giving us mitai, you know, which is like sweets and like sharing it with the crew. And we're thrilled that we got the take, but we're also thrilled that he's so happy that he had a daughter, because that's not always the case. So yeah, it was one of those moments where it was just like, ah, man, like this feels karmic. And it was, yeah, it was something that'll always stay with me.
That gave me goosebumps. Hey, I have two daughters. They're the best. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. I just had a niece. She's incredible.
Oh, they are some powerful people. They're already taking over my house, so. And then congrats. I know this was Pakistan's return to the Cannes director's fortnight after a gap of 47 years. I know it must feel amazing. Why do you think it took so long?
I think right now, in some ways, we're going through like a renaissance of Pakistani cinema. That gap also happened after like a US-backed dictator/general came to power, dismantled the film commission, and kind of set us into the dark ages. You know, in the 70s, Pakistan was a very different place. It was, and then the culture changed and our film industry kind of, you know, went to pieces. And now we have directors and writers and people who have access to tools that they've never had before. A lot of that comes from the World Wide Web, from internet, from YouTube tutorials, from opportunities that have never existed before. Like I learned at the Asian Film Academy, which is this incentive that Korea has where they bring filmmakers from all across Asia to work with like the best filmmakers in the world. And it's where I was working with people from across South Asia. And it was so amazing, you know? So there's opportunities and experiences that are now available. So we're experiencing kind of like a soft renaissance of Pakistani cinema. And it's been very cool to be a part of that. I'm confident it's going to continue.
Where can people watch this, first of all? And then are there any other projects you are allowed to share that you're working on?
So we're releasing across North America on April 12th. We're going to be in cinemas in New York, Chicago, LA, New Jersey. We're also going to be in cinemas in Toronto and Vancouver. And I'm going for a bunch of Q&As along with Bakhtawar and Ramisha, our two leads, who are going to be doing this kind of North American tour. The three of us are doing it together. So we start off next week. I'm really excited about it. I haven't seen them for a while and it's going to be wild. So I hope people come out. And yeah, so we'll be in cinemas. And then I am working on a project I can't say too much about. I can say it's about what it means to be an artist when the world is ending, and explores climate change through genre, but also not really.
Interesting. Feels like, again, an appropriate time for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think films need to talk about what's happening, and we're living through interesting times.
Definitely. I think films are the one medium that can help us maybe shift through all these crazy emotions we're all feeling, you know, in a healthy way. Well, if you guys are coming to Dallas, let me know. Where I'm based in Dallas. So if not, then you guys got to book Dallas.
We'll book Dallas. We're coming to Dallas.
Yes. I want to talk a little bit about your growing up. I know you said you were born there, you left, went back. Why did you ultimately choose to leave Karachi? Or are you split between Canada and there?
I left about a year and a half ago. I came back here to do post in the film and ended up staying. Right now, the situation in Pakistan is really volatile. A lot of people there's almost like a mass exodus brain drain kind of happening at this point. It's pretty sad. I hope things turn around quite soon. I'll probably always be between here and there. I've only ever lived in like one place. I don't know. I've never really lived in one place for more than like 8 years at a time. So I don't know what that would look like. And my next project is also set in Karachi. And also set in Canada. It's kind of between both worlds. So yeah, I mean, I think nations are a modern invention and people should move to the place that best suits their needs at the time.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is my 7th move in 15 years, so.
I think it's good for kids to grow up experiencing the world.
My first daughter was born in Dubai, my second one in Dallas, and they're 10 and 7 now, but they both have lived in 4 different cities already. And part of me is like, oh God, am I damaging them somehow? And then I see as they're growing up how adaptable they are to just any situation. It's pretty cool. I mean, call me in 10 years when they start bitching at me, but yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I hope they don't hate us and like as adults, but for now, it's been fun. So talk to me about your childhood there. How was it? Like, what was your childhood like? Fond memories.
My childhood was really idyllic. You know, like we lived in as most Pakistanis are, like a joint household. My grandparents lived on like the first floor and we lived on the second floor. And my mom was a school teacher who was really passionate about the arts. Like we have birthday videos where we would like, my mom would direct these little plays that we would all be doing together. It was a really good place to be a kid. And then I moved to the suburbs of Mississauga where it was another great place to be a kid. And I'm the youngest of 3. So there's always been less pressure on me than my other 2 siblings. To, you know, my oldest sister's a doctor. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
The third child.
Yeah. No one cares anymore. Yeah. At least you're
no
alive.
No one cares.
You know?
So. You basically raise yourself is what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, my mom had like a baby book for my sister. It's like fully every single milestone. Like she kind of had a baby book for my brother. 4 pages were done. And then by the time I came, there's like nothing. You know, she's like, I had 2 kids.
You're probably the most chill one out of all 3. My brother has 3. And I feel like the third one, she just ate whatever food was left over. Like she was just like, okay, whatever happens. And she's like now 9 and like, she's kind of a gangster. Like the third child's like kind of a gangster, so.
Yeah. I mean, I was the one who they would be like, you have to go talk to our parents. Because I was the youngest, so they would be nicer to me than the two of them. But yeah, I mean, it allowed me to be like the one. My brother went into finance. My sister went into medicine. So from a young age, I gravitated towards the arts. My parents were like, okay, we'll let this one try the arts. So I was lucky to have a really supportive family from a young age. And that allowed me to kind of pursue this ever since I was like 14. I did an undergrad in theater. So as a South Asian, you can imagine that's not, you know, the typical path. So it's good to be the youngest.
No kidding. Well, I was going to tell you, I have an older brother. He, of course, did the med school route and is a nice doctor. But now at the age of 47, he's like DJing on the side because he never which is great. I know. He's like the doctor DJ. Yeah, why not? I acted like a second and third child because I was like, well, I was too dumb for med school. I was like, I guess next is law school. Got to law school, did the lawyer thing. And then I was like, I'm going to be a third child and start a podcast.
Oh my God.
So, but you know what? Because I was married by that time, my parents were like, oh yeah, Becca, go ahead. It's fine.
Yeah. Are your parents listening?
They know how to get to it. I don't think they really listen anymore because I talk about them a lot. No, just kidding. No, they love it. They
shout out mom and dad.
I mean, yes, to all the mom and dads. No, they're happy now that it's actually become something versus like the first 50 episodes. They're like, what are you doing? Like, what's happening? But after 4 years of doing something, they're like, okay, fine. She's committed. But it is, I'm sure it's great to be the third kid. Are your siblings like, you should thank us for everything?
I mean, I feel like I've been the bad influence on them because my brother quit his finance job and is now becoming a finance entrepreneur. I mean, I've just always been like, live your life, guys. You know, like, so far, so good. But yeah, you know, we'll see how things play out.
I'm sure it's going to be fun. You're still the baby of the family. They're not going to get mad at you. It's fine. Okay, then I also read somewhere that growing up there, you also, and maybe this is, you said this, I read this wrong, but you also fell in love in Pakistan. Were you talking, is this something that was a long-term thing? Is this something that you could share that was part of the movie?
I fell in love with like my culture and like myself as Pakistani. Like, you know, that immigrant experience was destabilizing in some ways. It makes you feel like, especially when you immigrate when you're a kid, like you don't have a part in that conversation. I left when I was 9 and I felt like I was leaving this whole life behind. So when we moved back, I was able to fall in love with Pakistani culture again and what it means to be Pakistani and not, you know, a lot of being in the diaspora, you feel like you've been like ripped apart. And like, I felt like building my career there and building my artistry there allowed me to like fall in love with the place again and have a better idea of this place that my family came from and my parents came from and understand the complexity of why they left.
Curiosity, because, you know, obviously India and I know Pakistan India has so many different religions and cultures and languages, and it feels like 20,000 countries in one. And I know in the States, there's still division with that. How is it with Pakistanis in Canada? I know it's a community, but does it feel does it feel diverse? Does it feel divisive? Do you guys?
Pakistan and India, they're relatively new concepts. My grandma was born in India. That's what it says in her passport. You know, we still have family there. We share so many of the same experiences. It was when I moved back to Pakistan, I found out what like ethnic subculture I belong to. And like, once you're Pakistani or once you're Indian and you're in India, you're something else. You're no longer Indian. And I think we'll always, as a species, find a way to divide ourselves and subcategorize ourselves. But it was really interesting for me because, you know, I was able to learn about so many cultures that, like, I didn't know of. I did a short film on the Christian Goan community in Karachi. And outside of Goa, it's their largest population is in Karachi. It was a really incredible experience of learning about, like, a subculture within a city that people don't really talk about. And I think both of our countries are richer for their diversity. I just wish that the people in charge saw it that way.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast, my friend. Yeah. And then what about religion? Because Indian Pakistan culture is so tied to religion, identity is so tied to religion. What is your relationship with your religion?
I grew up between Pakistan and North America, and in North America, we're talking about Islamophobia, which is a very real concern. In Pakistan, I'm seeing that same religion being weaponized against communities who aren't from that religion. And simultaneously in Pakistan, we have people talking about Islamophobia. And I'm like, you can't be talking about Islamophobia. The whole country is Muslim. You know, we have our own problems. So my relationship with religion is I'm culturally religious. We have Eid coming up. I'm looking forward to celebrating with my family and like having biryani and pakore and like doing all those things. But I think I found religion to be a very man-made concept.
Yes, which it is. And it can be a beautiful thing.
And I know people who are deeply religious in my own family, and I love that for them. It gives power and strength. And my own experience has been seeing it from a different lens.
Yeah, I think take religion as it's healthy for you, right?
Yeah.
For yourself.
And to me, onto mine, to you, onto yours, which is a quote from the Quran. So.
Exactly. Everyone chill out. Everyone do their thing. It's fine. I'm going to do, it's just a fast round. So just the first thing that comes to your mind. Who or what would be your ultimate collaboration for this year?
I'll start with who and then do what? I don't know why, but Olivia Colman came to like the front of my mind. I would love to work with her. I think she's like an incredible talent and also really funny and somebody who can do drama, but can also do everything else. I'm writing a role that I think would be really good for her. So fingers crossed.
Put it out there in the universe.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd love if like a high-end hotel wanted to give me a vacation. I'd love to be an influencer collaborator, you know? Like Hilton Jamaica, call me, you know? Yeah. Let's go.
I agree. Yeah. This should happen. Let me know. I'll support you on that somehow.
Thank you.
We can be partners on that somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it.
We'd be great. We'd be great at laying around in hotels. I don't understand. What is your all-time favorite film?
That's tough, man, because I like know.
You can give me a few. You can give me a few. I'm totally fine.
Okay. I'm going to start this off with a hot take, which is Matilda, produced by Danny DeVito. It's an incredible movie about young people fighting a system of oppression with supernatural forces. And I hope you can see the influence on it in Flames. Because that movie is, it was great. I like watched it with my family.
You know, I've seen it like five times.
Same here. I watch it with my family.
I think I saw it last week.
I watch it with my family all the time. You know, I'm like, look, this movie is saying so much in so many levels. So I got that one. And then one I always come back to is The Big City by Satyajit Ray. It's an incredible movie that was so ahead of its time, technically, story-wise. It was speaking about gender roles in India in the 60s, about a woman who becomes who ends up being the bread earner of her house and how it upends her house, but how really it's not gender. It's, you know, we're operating under capitalism. And I'm like, this guy is so smart. And how is he making this movie? So, you know, that's another one that really is a touchstone for me. And also The Investigation of a Citizen Above Suspicion, which is this Italian movie that's speaking about fascism, and it's absurd and it's funny and it's dark. Yeah. So that was another, just a film I saw that like changed the way that I watch movies.
Okay. I'm going to have to write those down and check those out. What book would you want to turn into a film?
That's hard. There's a lot. I like reading a lot. One is this one, which is, I'll just bring it here.
I mean, you have it right there. This is amazing.
Yeah, I have it right here. It's called White Teeth by Zadie Smith. It is a really incredible book about spanning the lives of these two different families in London. One is like a Jamaican immigrant Jehovah's Witness family. One is a upper crust, waspy London white family that's in the sciences and that's developing cloning. And one is a deeply religious Pakistani society. So it's these three different families that are operating in their own subcultures that all come together because of the circumstances of London at a certain time. And it's talking about science and religion and family, and it would be amazing. So I'd love to do that one. Another one, it's like a kid's book. It's called The Graveyard Book. It's called The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman. It's about a kid who's raised by a village of ghosts because hell has sent an assassin to kill him, and how that village of ghosts trains him to survive whatever the world throws at him. So you might be seeing some patterns here for me.
Just about to say that. I was like, I'm seeing some themes here.
So those two are, I would love to adapt both of them. And then there's the one that I would like to, but I'm letting it go because I don't think it's for me, because I don't do romance really well. It's called Cartography. And it was a book that's set in Karachi. And it's such a beautiful love story about, yeah, just a boy and a girl and the families that keep them apart in society. It's like starts from them as kids and follows them to adulthood. And it's about faded love. And that was initially the one. And then I just realized that romance is not where I belong.
You never know.
You never know. You never know. And I'm always like, you never say never. So.
And exactly. It might not be your jam now, but, you know, in 5 years, you might be a different person. Yeah, not a different person, 100%. But different perspective. You know, you never know. Okay. Love it. I love the answers. Biggest pet peeve?
Dorito breath.
Oh my gosh. You're going to love this. My husband works for Pepsi and they own Frito-Lay, which is Doritos.
Ooh, yeah. No, you know, like when you know someone, my best friend growing up would always eat Doritos. And it's just like, it's a trigger for me.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe you shouldn't come to our house because there's a lot of drink. No, I'm kidding. I love that. I'll have to let him know. He's a chief growth officer for Frito-Lay. So okay. I will let him know.
Cheetos, I'm totally fine with. Cheetos are okay. Like flaming hot Cheetos, you know, orange sticky fingers for life. Dorito breath. I don't think we as a society would get along without flaming hot jalapeno Cheetos. I don't know. I think we'd crumble.
I think that would stop wars, actually. Just hand those out. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
If you have a bucket list, what is something you would want to check off this year?
I've been really blessed with getting to check off a lot of things on my list. I don't really have anything else that I'd like to do. It's been good. I just want to keep doing it and kind of keep rolling. I was super goal-oriented in my 20s, and now I'm in my early 30s, and I'm like, all right, let's just keep going.
Oh, you're still a baby, but that's good. I love it. Alternate universe, if you weren't doing this, what else would you be doing?
That's hard. Like, I've been in this most of my life. I think it would be interesting to, like, be in the sciences, like, as a researcher. Because, again, you kind of get to, like, build your own worlds. And you also have collaborators, but you're also kind of really doing things alone a lot of the time, which is what I like about directing as a job, where it's like there's these long stretches of time where it's just me. And then there's other stretches of time where I'm really deeply collaborating with people. But that's usually only for like 4 months. So for me, it's more about how the job can align with how I like to structure my life.
I like the way you describe that about being a director. I haven't heard that before. So that's really cool. I actually thought you were going to say you would want to be like an influencer for hotels.
I think that would require me to be social in a way that would be really hard.
Yeah. Tuckered Out is hosted by me, Ami Tucker. This episode is produced by Genie Media with Jeannie Saraswathy, Ashley Tuff, Micah Sweetman, Hans Andres, and Laura Radescu. You can follow me at Tuckered Out Podcast on Instagram. And please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast.